Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
We're all familiar with the narco submarines. Last year, the Colombian Navy seized a narco submarine that was completely unmanned. It was a drone that was using Starlink to help it navigate and carry drugs up to ideally the United States or Europe. So completely autonomous. They didn't need any people. Completely autonomous and using Starlink to maintain communication and GPS navigation up to the United States or Europe.
Wow.
They managed to seize it inside of Colombia. We don't got any reporting if it was used before or if it was a testing model, if it's been used, but the system was there. They had it all there. And it was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing cartel members, for example, regularly use Starlink very, very commonly in normal.
I'm Steve Murphy, DEA special agent retired and now host of the Game of Crimes podcast. If you've seen the Netflix series Narcos, then you know my story. I now bring you stories of heroism and bravery from our law enforcement and military heroes, and occasionally from the criminals that they faced. Welcome to Game of Crimes. Hey, gang, welcome back to part two of this week's episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. We're continuing our conversation with Stefano Rittendale, a U.S. Army veteran who is now involved in geopolitical analysis. Look at that. Murph got two big words together in a row. That's unusual here on Game of Crimes. But if you joined us yesterday, if you did, go back and watch that, because what we're learning, or what I'm learning specifically, I know you are too, is we're getting an inside look at what's going on things that directly affect the safety of our country, the safety of our citizens, the drug situation, the border issues, the Mexican cartels, other groups that affect the safety of our country here. So we're going to continue talking about that right now. So, Stefano, thank you very much for coming back for part two with me.
Thank you, Brian Amiga.
And I bring on a lot of smart people. Most of them are smarter than me, but you really are.
Thank you.
So talking about the Mexican cartels, mm-hmm. where we left off yesterday, give us an idea how they've evolved over the past decade.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like every time I'm on this, in any podcast or anywhere, I always recommend this book from Nathan Jones. And he wrote a book called Mexico and the Illicit State Network.
Okay.
And it's a phenomenal book. I'll show it to you, and I highly recommend it. He produced this back in 2016, and I think it really transformed my understanding of Mexican cartels, right? And it really helped me frame it. And his whole argument is basically, he goes through all the kind of examples of cartels, and he says, I think 10 years ago, even 20 years ago or 30 years ago, the primary model of the drug trafficking organizations and the cartels, what would he consider transactional cartels?
Okay.
And the transactional cartel, you know, broadly speaking, I think the case example would be the Guadalajara cartel. Like, let's just get drugs over to the United States. We have a product. We want to sell the product. We want to get over to the United States. That's our main issue. And you build a network and a business architecture. And violence is there, but it's more about let's get a product from one area to another, and that's how we do it. And the other model is called the territorial cartel. And the territorial cartel, this is where the militarization aspect comes into play, because they have to seize territory and hold it, because that's their main way of making money, either because they control the routes where the drugs go through or how they have it, extortion, etc. But that territory becomes a centerpiece in their business model, and as such, by needing to hold it, they have to build the militarized force to be able to do it. And I think the main difference from 10 years ago to now is that we're seeing drug cartels that were maybe transactional, or for the most part, all going to a territorial with still transactional component, but much more territorial than the past. And that's why we see the militarization, and that's why we see the violence. Because a lot of things I'm seeing is, for example, right, why Jalisco New Generation Cartel Los Mayos fighting in Zacatecas, or right, you look at this. But some of the videos you see, like, oh, Zacatecas has a lot of mine and silver. Got it, right? But you see the videos, and I'm like, okay, they're fighting for, like, this in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like, what is the purpose? What, there's not even a road, but they're battling each other out. And it's because that's the thing. They have kind of almost, they had this inertia to territory, and that's where you're seeing that. And I think that is why that kind of explains a lot of the violence that we've seen inside of Mexico and a lot of the militarization of the drug cartels.
Do you see them having better intel capabilities, mm-hmm. better technological capabilities?
I think there was a report, I believe it was Reuters who first broke it, or the New York Times, that talked about all the way back, I believe in 2018, how Sinaloa cartel hackers managed to hack into the U.S. embassy and get a lot of informants and kind of go after those informants. We talked about the drones and their capabilities there. The next thing I'm looking at is a specific type. It's called FPV drones, very common in Ukraine, where specifically with fiber optics, you're able to maneuver it. You can't jam it necessarily. Not those types of drones are not very well common yet into Mexico, but it's soon. I'm also very interested in seeing, for example, we've seen cartels buy very sophisticated hacking equipment and tracking equipment, especially for social media and WhatsApp networks. So for them to do their own network analysis. And obviously the next step is them incorporating AI for them to do that and use that to start building that. So yes, they're very, very sophisticated organizations, very technologically advanced, and they have the money to continue to basically do what we would consider R&D. And I mean, I don't know if, I think it was last year. I mean, here's a perfect example. We're all familiar with the narco submarines.
Right.
Last year, the Colombian Navy seized a narco submarine that was completely unmanned. It was a drone that was using Starlink to help it navigate and carry drugs up to, ideally, the United States or Europe. So completely autonomous. They didn't need any people. Completely autonomous and using Starlink to maintain communication and GPS navigation up to the United States or Europe.
Wow.
So
how close did it get before they intercept?
Not much. No, it was they managed to seize it inside of Colombia. We don't got any reporting if it was used before or if it was a testing model, if it's been used, but the system was there. They had it all there. And it was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And now you are seeing cartel members, for example, regularly use Starlink very, very commonly in normal. Yeah.
And that's amazing. I don't know. Nothing should surprise us anymore, but it's, mm-hmm. it's not comical. It is eye-opening when you hear those kind of stories.
Yeah.
So have you seen the violence increase over the past several years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mexican government likes to, Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, likes to say, violence has gone to, this is such a lie.
Right.
They're lying through their teeth. So there's two ways they do this. One, first of all, disappearance of skyrocket in Mexico. And number two, they've even created a separate category of like homicides so that the overall homicide rate looks like it's going down, but because a lot of the homicides, they just put it into this different category and so are able to say, violence is going down in Mexico. No, it's not. But every Mexican government does that. But what I would say is, and this kind of goes back to this militarization of the drug cartels, right? And there's like, the militarization of the drug wars and how dare you, blah, blah, blah. It's like a lot of the violence, though, inside of Mexico is also, it's like intra-cartel violence, like one cartel versus another, right?
Right.
And the homicides of that, outside of just the breakdown of the rule of law inside of Mexico and the normalization of violence that kind of permeates throughout society, the feminicide problem in Mexico is well-documented and known. 90% of homicides in Mexico don't even get investigated. You know, the perfect example, I would say, let's say you and I have a business dispute in Mexico. I don't want to go through court. I'll just kill you. If 90% of homicides in Mexico don't even get investigated,
chances of getting caught are pretty slim.
Pretty slim. And I just win because you're gone, right? But a lot of the violence in Mexico is because of intra-cartel violence, right? Even outside of just the state response to it. And that causes homicides to go up. So when people see reports, the Mexican homicide rate is going down, and that's a lie. It's government manipulating data, mm-hmm. right? And that's just the reality. But yeah, violence has gone up.
Are you seeing increased sophistication in how the cartel collects intelligence?
Yeah. One of the things that really caught me by surprise when I first started to do this, but obviously it makes sense, is like, for example, they have very sophisticated CCTV centers, like security centers, like a GSOC, where they have, and they control the cameras. And they actually install their own like CCTV cameras across the city. And they're all connected to their own network. And then they use that to control the areas where they're operating. The next step easily then would become, again, AI, specifically for facial recognition.
Right.
Right. I mean, they had these established. And so that's a perfect area to do intelligence. Los halcones, the famous cartel observers, I get paid money and they're just there observing. Right. Like me, like it's a CAV squadron. That's what I would do. You would set up an OP, an observation post, be there, observe. Is there tanks moving? Is there something else moving? What's that? Same thing over there now. Up there with a radio and then on a phone or with WhatsApp, and they just pass intelligence and information. But yeah, they have very sophisticated ways of doing collection of intelligence. And then I get in these hacking operations against the embassies, another case in point where they managed to get all the informants and a lot of them were killed as a response. So yeah, very underestimate these cartels at your own risk, I would say.
Yeah. Years ago, when I was still in a job with DEA, I went down the Mexican border doing some briefings, and I think this was Ote Mesa or one of the borders down through there off of California. And, you know, you're there for meetings, so you're a government official, you have a coat and tie on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got rid of the coat because it was hot, but you still had your tie on. And so they said, come on, we're going to show you, walk you right up to the fence. And so we walk up, and you can see an individual kind of pushing people out of the way to get to the fence. And I'm watching his hands to see if I'm about to be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, do you know who he is? I said, I don't have a clue. He said, he speaks English. He's coming here to listen to our conversation. And sure enough, he starts to be speaking to me in unaccented English. And that's one of their lookouts.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw the suits and they're like, okay, here comes a couple of government officials. Let's see what they're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of laughed at him and turned around and left. But it was amazing. It kind of goes along with the lookouts that you were talking about. But you already talked about the drones, that they were using those for surveillance already. You can see the militarization of those. You can see how they're going to mm-hmm. use those to come across the border and drop loads of cocaine or marijuana or whatever, fentanyl or meth, whatever they happen to be going with. What about the influence of the social media? How are they capitalizing on that?
Well, it's very funny. That's literally what I'm going to talk about in the presentation. So again, I think a lot of people ask me, why do cartel members have social media? Like, they're kind of shocked about that. And I think it kind of goes back to this idea, maybe like they mix cartels with the mob. Right. And the mob historically secret and like, oh, or like Batman, right? Like, oh, we're going to have these secret gatherings and all these places. That's not how these guys operate in Mexico. But again, it goes back to impunity. There is no repercussions. They widely use social media, both their members and just to highlight their day-to-day activity. Is like, you have friends probably then that are law enforcement. They upload on social media, their jobs and everything. They use it the same way, like, right? But then there's also this a much more sophisticated measure, specifically from a messaging, information warfare, and propaganda perspective, right? One of the interesting things I would even say in the last year that I've noticed, or 2 years I've seen a significant change, is this almost like this consolidation in a way in the information space of using social media, but a much more effective propaganda aspect, right? Like now they have almost like identified channels where they push information, right? It used to be there was like one individual who was a cartel affiliated. He would get the videos because he has a network and he would distribute them in his social media. People would see it. And you still have that very much so. But now you're seeing some of this consolidation from a messaging perspective, almost like a corporation's marketing and communications plan, right? And then they push these narratives and the information and they even coordinate internally messaging. And then that messaging then gets shared across the network of individuals to make sure it's widely received, depending if it's a Mexican audience or if it's even sometimes a U.S. audience. Now, I would say 99% of the messaging that I see from cartels is mostly focused inside of Mexico, right? Not necessarily directed at the United States. They're more interested in Mexico.
Right.
And because, again, it goes back to who is the cartel's biggest threat? It's their rival cartel. Not the government. It's not the U.S. It's the rival cartel. That's who their day-to-day biggest threat, and that's who they're fighting. And so you see this kind of this network starting to be established that reinforces this almost this communications plan and propaganda arm that pushes information.
What are some of the trends or trends that you're seeing that we should really be concerned about today? Or is it just business as usual?
I think the cocaine. I think the cocaine is a huge problem. I I'm not trying to get into the politics of it, but I think with everything that's going on, people are thinking like the cocaine drug trafficking. I think the amount of cocaine is being flooded is it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just an insane thing. That's number one. But then number two, I'm very concerned. It's specifically a Jalisco Generation Cartel, who's also probably one of the key players in the cocaine trade, the ones who's really been pushing this much more than others. But the Mexican oil, right? And a lot of the scandals that has happened in the Mexican oil and how that goes into the United States, because that has broad implications to the U.S. economy as well, right? And we've seen businesses in the U.S. be indicted for buying stolen oil by cartel members that sold the United States. And obviously that has broad economic implications for Mexico. Those are the kind of from the business model, from the cartel dynamics, one of the things that is kind of concerning to me from a trend, and I think this is what we're more used to, right, is I think we're all used to, you would kill a cartel leader, you would capture a cartel leader, and then fragmentation, other cartels form, and then violence happens, right? And that's generally been the rule of thumb of what we've seen. But since 2024, 2025, I'm actually starting to notice the opposite. Kind of to your idea, this consolidation that now, but it's now these formings of these alliances. And so now the violence is actually expanding because you're starting to see alliances form. I think the Chapito CJNG alliance fundamentally transformed the Mexican cartel dynamic landscape. And to the point you can even make an argument, it can be even viewed as a before and after, right? And that alliance forced those Mayos to enter into alliance of their own, right? The main one that the Mayos had is with the Guasave cartel, the Mesa Flores organization, also known as Chapo Isidro, and the Northeast cartel, CDN. There's conversations that the Santa Rosa Lima cartel is also part of that. There's conversations maybe the United cartels can join that. CJNG, Chapitos, obviously the Metros are part of that. The Juarez cartel or La Línea, the Arellano Felix organization. And so what you're starting to see is almost like, it's almost like this axis and allies, right? In a way inside of Mexico, where you have these two factions. And so historically, how we see the violence is one cartel die, a leader dies, or there's fragmentation breakup that causes violence. Now it's no, or one cartel enters into a territory or another and the violence, but they're kind of not necessarily tied to another. Now you're seeing these consolidations. And the concern is what I used to say, where sometimes the cartel wars have nothing to do with the other. The concern I have is like, are they all start to be tied together? Because if they started to be tied together, now it's very hard to maybe try to get peace or stability in one region because you can cut, because they're isolated, have nothing to do with the other. You can isolate that and start getting peace and stability, at least from the Mexican perspective, either through security measures or even negotiating with the cartels directly. If you start seeing this consolidation of alliances and the conflict is starting to happen because of that, it's really, from a security perspective, it's a lot harder to solve that problem than others. And I think that's a very worrisome trend that I think a lot of us in the industry who've been doing this are not used to, and we're not even having those conversations right now.
Well, you mentioned they had the ability to hack the embassy at one point. Are you worried about their cyber capabilities?
I'm going to be honest. Like, I mean, obviously, it's always a concern. It's always a problem. Don't get me wrong. But I think the U.S. government is always going to be leagues ahead. It's just we have to be smart about it and not just be lackadaisical and ignorant about it, right? Don't look, for my time when I was a battalion S2 or doing counter, like the NSA, like, and those guys know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I would always say, like, we are always going to be better. Obviously, the cartels are going to adapt and overcome and all that. But I think if organizations practice good OPSEC, good cybersecurity in many aspects and just keep an eye on it, we're always going to be ahead. We just do not be lazy.
Yeah.
And don't be complacent is the key one, I would say.
So look in your crystal ball here, and 5 years from now, do you see the cartel stronger or weaker?
I think the key question of that is what happens to Jalisco New Generation Cartel with the killing of El Mencho, and now that his stepson, O3, took over and is fairly fresh and new, what does that mean? I think, and then that one and then the Mayos are the other two. Those are going to be the key determining factors of what the Mexican cartel landscapes look like, because in the end of the day, from an international drug trafficking perspective, there's only really two in Mexico who do this. So Jalisco New Generation Cartel and the Sinaloa Cartel. Right? Those are the real main international drug traffickers. The other ones, not as much.
Yeah.
If they're weakened, if they're stronger, then everything stays as is. Because right now, I think nobody's going to disagree that Jalisco New Generation Cartel not only is the most powerful cartel in Mexico, they're the most powerful criminal organization in the world, period. No other organization comes even remotely close to them, right? What I would say, though, if they're weakened, just as the Colombian cartel, when they were weakened, the Mexican cartels took over, the one that I'm looking at that could replace and supplant them or take over that mantle would be the Brazilian gangs, specifically PCC and Red Commando.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like PCC and Red Commando influence has exploded in Western Africa and Europe. and we're starting to see the early indications of them establishing shops into the United States. Actually, finally, I've been screaming this for years about the Brazilian gangs, like years, like focus on them. The Wall Street Journal finally did a report on them about the Brazilian gangs and their power. And I think that the perfect example I would say is, I remember in my, like, the first time I ever talked about, from a gang perspective, right? Like, everybody was talking about MS-13. I believe the first time I ever brought up Tren de Aragua was all the way back in, like, early 2023, right? Right. Way before they became publicly known, and specifically in the U.S. political discourse. And the reason why they caught my eye is Chile, public opinion, the issue of security was starting to rise from a public opinion. And if Chile is worried about security, that's concerning. Because Chile is a very safe and stable country. They do not have the problems that Brazil, Peru, Colombia, Ecuador specifically, right? We didn't even talk about that. So if Chile started, I started to look into this, and I kind of knew about Tren de Aragua and all that, but the Chilean press was like, Tren de Aragua. They're the reason why. But I was like, wait a minute. If Chile is saying Tren de Aragua is a problem for them, that means from a gang landscape, they're going to be a problem other places around the world. And that's kind of what we see. Some of it, I do believe, unfortunately, from a political perspective, unfortunately, gets overblown, but there is significant concern. I'm starting to see the same for Brazilian gangs. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think gangs is the right term, because they're drug trafficking organizations. Specifically, just as you have the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco New Generation cartel, the two main ones that have a significant, because there's a lot of gangs that do it similar to like Mexico, but the two ones that have like that international presence, without a doubt, number one would be PCC, and then number two, the Red Commandos. And you're starting to see them just really spread. And so if the Mexican cartels weakened, they, I think, are in a prime position to take over or at least become the dominant one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's unfortunately, it's just they just switch. Yeah. Colombia, Mexico, and maybe Brazil, or maybe the Mexicans can continue to control that. And I think that's the likely outcome. But if it's not, then I would look at the Brazilian gangs.
Scary.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Let's look a little bit more at the global threat environment here. So this is a strange question. I wrote it down like this, and I'm looking at it now thinking, this might be a little too much. So here's what I wrote. If I gave you China, mm-hmm. Russia, mm-hmm. Iran, mm-hmm. the Middle East, cyber actors, cartels, domestic instability, how would you rate those?
Damn.
I guess for biggest threat to least threat.
China, number one. Russia, number two, because of the nuclear arsenal. And the threat to, but they have been so severely degraded as a military force. I mean, they're always going to be a threat to Europe, but God, and the Ukrainians made them pay.
Mm-hmm.
Bad.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Iran has been significantly degraded as well, but they would be number three because of the whole issue of the Straits of Hormuz, their proxy network, and their ability to conduct terrorist attacks around the world, even though they've been degraded and all that. Actually, no, number three, let me put North Korea. I'll put three North Korea because you have Iran with the Straits of Hormuz. North Korea, I mean, obviously their nuclear program and all that is still a problem, but even outside of just the nuclear component, do not underestimate. Like, if there's a second Korea war, it's Seoul, not from a nuclear. The amount of artillery that North Korea has pointed directly at the capital of South Korea, which is a G20 country, a very advanced modern economy, integral to the world economy. I mean, the capital would go gone. Like, it's so North Korea, Iran, I would put cartels, cyber actors, and domestic instability. That's how I would rank it. And I know people, maybe the domestic instability, I think. Social media has a way of, and especially I think now how the internet works, it's always like the now is worse. And it's like, are we really going to forget the time of the Vietnam War and the domestic instability in the United States and segregation? Like, no, you can look at history, guys. Like, we've been in a lot worse spots. Like,
right.
When everybody tells me like, oh, we haven't been this bad since the Civil War, it's like, you're like, that's not even remotely close to historical reality, and you're completely ignoring the crime waves of the 80s and the 90s and the drug epidemic. Like, we're not. Is there problems? Yes. Does social media and the news organizations make it seem a lot worse than the reality is? Absolutely. I remember when I lived in El Paso. I was living in El Paso for 10 years. My kids were born in El Paso. Look, I'm not trying to get into politics, but I would always scratch my head, like people, you know, when they were talking, oh, El Paso's being flooded with migrants and we're being flooded. And everything. Look, I'm not getting into the politics, but dude, I lived there. Like, my kids go to school there. I would go to downtown. Like, yeah, did I see migrants? Yeah, sure. Was it a problem for me? No. Did it, like, destroy my life? No. Did it, like, when I would talk to people in El Paso would talk more about the Dallas Cowboys than the migrants. I wish they talked about the migrants. I didn't want to hear about the Dallas Cowboys. I despise the Dallas Cowboys because of all the times they would talk about it. So I just think, like, look, again, I'm not trying to get into the politics, but I just think a lot of people always want to focus more on the now. And we have to be cognizant and just say, like, it appears to be a lot worse than it really is. But I would say China would be number one simply because of the situation with Taiwan and I think their military capabilities and other aspects. I think we had to look at Russia and Ukraine and the failures there. And I think a lot of that would affect China as well. But I mean, it would be if there's a World War III kind of conversation, it would be China.
Yeah.
So that's why I would put them number one.
So on a global scale, what's the biggest unknown? Would that be North Korea that you mentioned?
For me, maybe North Korea because that kind of wasn't listed. But what would be the biggest unknown? That would be a threat. Obviously you still have, you know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all that. Again, they've been severely degraded, but those are known. What would be the biggest? That is a good question. I mean, I think if you're analyzing the world and how it is, I think the biggest concern of global instability is South Asia. So that would be, in my mind, Pakistan, India, and to a second degree, China, and that construct of all the border conflicts. So specifically the Kashmir region, right, and all that, the problems you have there. I think that is that's why when India and Pakistan kicked off last year, I think there was a reason why at the beginning the U.S. didn't get involved, and then it got to the point where the president had to get involved to, like, all right, let's see if we can stop this. Because that's the only time we've had a history of nuclear armed countries and active war. Like, one thing is a Cold War, right? Where it's just like in the shadow, in the background, and there's tension. But only in India and Pakistan is when you have actual nation states that are nuclear armed engaged in war. That to me is, like, in a way, the unknown, because the broad implications
of all the threats that we face around the world. Which threat do you think gets too much attention? And which threat do you think doesn't get enough attention?
God, man, holy. Is this a job interview?
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Oh, man. Maybe, I think obviously too much attention, but I agree that there's reasonings for it, right? Would be China, right? Obviously, they're the ones that get too much attention, but there's obvious reasons for that. But I do believe they're the ones that get too much attention. I think the Russia threat, I understand. I would also kind of say, I think if I think the concerns about Russia is more about, can they break up the NATO alliance? But because, like, with the political situation between the transatlantic alliance and all that, I do believe it gets a little bit overblown. And my argument is also, like, if Russia couldn't take Ukraine, if they want to go for the Baltics, I know Poland has and Finland has a military component. Very sophisticated and robust military capabilities just on themselves, right? So I think that's the one that gets a little bit overblown. There's still a threat. There's still a significant threat. There's specific threat to Europe. But do not discount how much the Ukrainians have been able to mitigate that threat because of their will to fight and make the Russians pay significantly for what happened and how that has increased European security from a military to military component. So I think it would actually retract to China. It would be the Russia one, right? That kind of, because we're not taking into account, like, the, yeah. As somebody who, in the armor, when I was a tanker, It's funny. I was the first, one of the first classes that went through Armor Training School that got away from COIN, counterinsurgency. And they said, we're going back to force on force. And so we were one of the first classes that was like, you're going to learn the Russians, just as like back in the day, we knew the Soviets. So we were like, we had to know everything from the T-55, the T-62, the T-72, the T-80, the T-90, the BMP-1, 2, 3. Like we were like, this is Russian doctrine. This is how they fight. Like we were like, screw Al-Qaeda, screw the Taliban. We're not, you're not learning that anymore. Like Russia, 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 Russia.
Right.
Right. Now you're seeing a lot of the like people that are going through right now, it's China, 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 China. So I think we have to take into account how Ukraine's degradation has really mitigated the Russia threat for us. So I think the Russia's the overblown. The one that doesn't get enough attention, in my mind, from a U.S. perspective, because I think they're all, from a broadly speaking, get a lot. I would probably then say, I would go back to be careful. Because I think a lot of them get a lot of coverage, but the one that doesn't get enough coverage, and this is where I'm going to go to the criminal landscape, would probably be the Brazilian gangs.
Okay.
Right? Because they're establishing themselves, they're primed and ready. They're primed and ready. And Brazil is the largest economy in South America. They're part of the BRICS. There's, you know, this is a country that we want to focus on the Western Hemisphere. I think that's the thing, and we have to be very careful that obviously we all interested in democracy and liberty and all that, and for the specifically in the Western Hemisphere, because authoritarianism can cause instability down the road. But it's very hard to advocate for democracy if you're a person who suffers insurmountable violence because of gangs.
Right.
Right. And so you want security at all costs, and how that can get the rise of kind of these authoritarian leaders to kind of take control and establish themselves. So I would say Brazilian gangs, because they can cause violence to be very rise significantly, and that can have a lot of broader implications for South America.
Okay. We'll go back to Intel just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see AI changing Intel collection?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Is it for the good or for the worse?
I mean, anything could be done badly, right? And for the worst, but in the good, like, or maybe when we say the worst, like from a evil perspective, right?
Right. From the bad, yeah.
Yeah. But what I would say, I think for the better, because it's going to help, especially with OSA. It's just the amount of information that gets published on a daily basis is insane, right? And look, my main criticism is that we don't have a dedicated open source intelligence agency. We have a human agency, which is the CIA. In many ways, even the DIA dabbles into that. SIGINT is NSA. IMINT is NGA, right? So you have all the intelligence sources, right, have their own intelligence agency. OSINT doesn't. And what happens then is everybody within the government, we all want to do our own OSINT. And then there's this cross-contamination. And there's like, we're all duplicate of efforts. And we're not cross-coordinating and nothing. And so we're wasting time. And then how they do it, it's like, look, I got it. Great. But it's really good. But like, it's so ineffective with the amount of information. Oh, by the way, the world is just becoming more and more and more interconnected. We're becoming more and more. More people are having access to the internet. So the amount of OSINT is going to increase. But just from an intelligence overall, the same SIGINT capability, imagery capability, human even. AI is going to help you. What is AI best at? Analyzing large data sets and just giving you the best analysis and understanding as possible. That's what it's there for. It's going to help us be much more effective and efficient. That's the future of it.
I think I know the answer to this, but what should we as Americans be focusing on right now?
From a security perspective, I think if we're analyzing it from our wheelhouse and how we do it, I think we need to be focusing. There needs to be a better understanding of the violence in Mexico, because that can have, and the reason why I didn't say, I said Brazilian gangs and not Mexico, because I think obviously the converse of like what we're ignoring, I think the Mexican cartels is covered. I just think there's things we need to cover better. The Brazilian gangs just gets ignored. But what I'm going to get at that we need to be focusing on is a lot of the things that happen in Mexico can have implications in the United States, right? Like, let's say if you're concerned about immigration, et cetera, right? A lot of times, the reason why a lot of Mexicans flee over to the United States is because they're just fleeing cartel violence.
Right. Understandably.
And they're going to... Sasabe, Sonora. There's a Sasabe, Arizona, Sasabe, Sonora. The violence had got so bad in Sasabe, Sonora that it became a ghost town. They all fled into Arizona. because the violence was just so bad. To the point that there was RPGs flying at each other and they're battling it out. And you literally, I mean, I was talking to people who were like Border Patrol agents and they're like, yeah, we were just there. And you just see the tracers just like in the series, Sicario,
mm-hmm.
when they go up in the Juarez and you see the tracers and the explosion. Like, that's literally like, yeah, we were seeing that. Like, so what happened? All those people fled over. And I think that's the concern. It's like, look, I'm not saying, I don't want people to misconstrue and misidentify this idea that Mexico's on the verge of collapse. No. But unfortunately, we see the worst case scenario that can happen, which is Haiti. We need to understand that the violence in Mexico will impact us, because in the end of the day, not only is there deep cultural and political connections between both of our countries, but there's deep economic insecurity as well.
Right. Gave you some good questions. All right, let's loosen up here just a little bit.
Mm.
So I've started a new thing on the podcast called the Rapid Fire Round.
Uh-oh.
This is one-word answers or short answers.
All right.
Nothing you have to overthink.
Okay.
It's meant to be fun, but also we learn. So, the best intelligence movie?
I really like Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah?
I really like it.
All right. The worst intelligence movie?
Oh. Worse. Okay. Like, I love the series, but it's not intelligence, but people think it is. It's James Bond. That's not real intel because that's not intel. That's not what MI6 does, but I love it. I love it, but it's not intel.
Yeah.
But people think that's what intel people do. It's like, no.
Yep. One country you're watching closely. So I think you've told.
Well, that I haven't mentioned is Cuba. Right now it's Cuba.
All right. We might have to come back. One cartel people should know more about.
The independent cartel of Sonora. Los Salazar, Paredes, y Cazadores. They all used to belong to Los Chapitos. They broke off before the Chapitos Mayo Civil War. They broke off and started fighting Los Chapitos back in 2023 in Sonora. And they formed their own group.
All right. Here's a hard one. Coffee or energy drinks?
Coffee.
But you wanted an energy drink earlier.
Well, because it was in the afternoon.
Okay.
But I'm always coffee. But yeah, Americana. That's my go-to, Americana.
Gotcha. Human intel or signals?
Signal. A million signal. No doubt.
The most useful trait for an analyst?
Be open-minded.
Good advice for everybody. One technology changing intelligence forever.
AI.
Yeah. One person from history you'd like to interview?
I'd like to interview. George H.W. Bush.
Wow. Okay. Didn't see that one.
George H.W. Bush. But yeah.
The most dangerous thing you see online today?
You know, have you ever heard of the Order of the Nine Angels?
No.
So it's the satanic cults and the normalization of violence. We had a whole, I know this is one, if I may.
Yes.
We had a whole, we have a podcast called The Bluff, and we had an expert on this. We were talking about this. It's unfortunately, and I think a lot of the mass shootings are being tied to this. It's just, I think how like crime, violence becomes a crime, violence because of politics. There's a new trend, and I think the internet is making this. It's just violence for violence, just violence as an end goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're seeing that has been permeated specifically in younger adults, young men. And we're seeing mass shootings. Extreme levels of violence, torture, and the cartel, like the decapitation videos and all that, the cartel, it feeds into them. And so it's really satanic neo-Nazi ideology and it's all this warped. But in the end of the day, what it really boils down to is violence for violence sakes and try to be the most violent. And it's almost like a competition. That's my concern.
Wow. Books everyone should read.
Well, if you're interested in cartels, it's the one I recommended, the Mexico and the Illicit State Actors by Nathan P. Jones. That if you want to have a good kind of broad sense of the cartel dynamics I'm speaking about, that's a book you should read.
What do you think the biggest mistake is that leaders currently make?
You. My personal belief is personal relationships. Specifically, we're talking about military and political leaders, even sometimes business. We overemphasize personal relationships. And I don't think that's the key determining factor in many aspects.
Right.
There's other things that need to be considered. And I think it's specifically at like political leaders, but across the board, overemphasizing personal relationships.
Yeah. It certainly lends support that something's going on under the table, in Murph's opinion. And one more. If you could know one classified truth instantly, what would it be?
Because there's one, but I can't say it because that's something that happened when I was deployed. So I'm not going to say that one. Okay. I got it. I have a conspiracy theory. And this I would want to know. Was the Sinaloa cartel civil war the actual end goal of the U.S. government? Did they want it to happen? That's what I want to know.
Okay. All right. So just a couple more questions.
Okay.
I'll get you out of here. What's one thing that listeners should pay attention to over the next year?
Broadly speaking, Xi Jinping's paranoia. What he's done to the leadership in China is like, just like the military specifically. Like, it's just, we had a whole podcast before and we always said, like, I just think he's absolutely paranoid. He's not acting as an irrational actor. That I think is not getting enough coverage. And I think people are afraid to talk about it. Because you're trying to analyze somebody. It's like, can I get into his head? But you can't. So then you try to analyze it from another perspective, from a rational actor perspective. But you just have to look at this and say, it's okay to analyze something as an irrational actor, and you should do it. Because I think that is not getting enough conversation.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years and 10 years from now? Where's Stefano?
Back on your show.
Good answer. President of your company?
Oh, no, I'm a co-founder. I'm very happy. No. Our CEO, Christian, he's a good friend of mine. He's the CEO. I do the intel. I do the human people, the conversations. I'm like, I am extremely happy here doing that. And then maybe more of this. I mean, I've been doing a lot of this. If in 5 and 10 years, our company, we want it to be the next Palantir, in a way, we are a startup. We're up and coming in the industry. We have a lot of things. But I would like to be thought-provoking. I mean, if you were to tell me if I were to dream, not 5 and 10 years, but if I were to dream, I mean, I think it would be some role. I've always found it passionate, like people who are the officer and director of national intelligence, that role, national security advisor, CIA director. But I would think the ODNI would be one because I think there's a lot of changes from a technological perspective that are going on in the intelligence community, and we have to prioritize that. Like, I think, for example, the Secretary of the Army, Dan Driscoll, I think he's been doing a very good job of identifying, of breaking through those barriers that have been going on. And that's something that across administrations, they're getting better and better and better at addressing. And we're getting at that point. I think we need to do the same in the intelligence community, specifically with all these capabilities. And we just need to be honest and upfront about it.
Excellent. And I'm not sure that I gave his official title. He's the chief intelligence officer. What's the name of your company?
Artorias.
Artorias.
And my social media is All Source News.
There you go. One last question that I ask everybody. Do you have any words of advice or wisdom for anyone's considering a career as an intel analyst? And let me just say right now, we always say, Javier Pena, myself. Yeah. The best team you can find out there in the law enforcement investigative field is a good agent and a good analyst that can set their egos aside, work together, mm-hmm. and just kick butt and take names. But what wisdom or advice would you have for anybody being an analyst going into law enforcement or going into?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've always found it very passionate to be an analyst. Funny enough, actually, I'm gonna call you guys out a second, if I may.
Should do it.
So
I'm retired now.
Yeah. So when I was getting out of active duty, I submitted paperwork to be a DEA special agent.
Yeah.
And the DEA lost my paperwork. And they said, hey, can you resubmit
it? Nothing.
I know. Can you resubmit it? I'm like, no. You lost me. I'm out. I'm not working for an organization. No.
How long did you have to wait before you found that out?
Like 6 months.
Yeah. So it's a 2-year process.
Yeah. And I was like, but you guys haven't, like I said, oh, we received it. I was like, I had nothing. Hey, guys, just following up. Oh, we lost it. Like, oh, my God.
Oh, forgiveness, huh?
Yeah. Anyway, you guys are all right. Actually, I mean, that's a very, I kind of alluded, I don't mean this kind of, it was very interesting with this whole Trump administration, if I may, how the Western Hemisphere and the cartels, it's kind of like if the DEA is like, you're seeing the CIA much more involved, the FBI is like, from that construct, I think that would be a great conversation I'd like to have with you is like, how does the DEA, is this a competition? Do they want, what is like the differentiating factor? Because this always was your lead, and now you're seeing much more involvement than others, and that's kind of an interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm. But what I would say to people, I mean, from my perspective, overall, right, if you're going to do this, law enforcement, military, intel analysts, whatever, at the end of the day, it has to be a calling for service. That's why you do it. You don't do it for the money. You don't do it for the fame. You do it for the service.
Absolutely.
And I would say once you're in it, I think the DEA, FBI, the military, they have like a career path for you. You're going to do this, and then you're going to do that, and then you're going to do that, and then you're going to do that. And I think what you realize with me is like, I didn't do any of that. You know, when I graduated the Merchant Marine Academy, it's like, oh, you're going to be in the reserves, the Naval Reserve Program. You're going to be sailing, or if you do active duty, very few of you do. And I went active duty, and there was an armor officer. I did aid, and then I did this, and then this. I did whatever I wanted. And I said to the people, if you're interested, if an opportunity arises, go for it. Don't just because somebody says this is your career path, you have to do that. Who cares? Take it. Just run with it. Jump with it. If it's something that interests you, doesn't matter if it calls you or not, go for it. Right? Because you never know. I being serious, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if it wasn't because I took that aid position.
Right.
That's
exactly. I 100 million percent. And then overall, and that's a lot of things. But the other thing is I created my cartel account as a hobby. And look at me now.
Exactly. You took your hobby and you made a career out of it.
Exactly. I literally grabbed all the things and like more. And now, you know, maybe our tour and maybe 5 years for something else. It's okay. It's totally. My degree, by the way, is in a thing called, I had a Coast Guard license to be a merchant mariner, never used it. And my degree is in marine transportation, which is basically maritime economics. Didn't do it once. So you're good.
Yeah.
You're good.
Well, and what I say is life's an adventure. You take advantage of it. And you go into these careers. I mean, you're going to get to travel places you probably never would have gone in your life. And somebody else is going to pay for it. And you're going to get paid to do it.
I love the travels. I traveled. I was very fortunate with the Merchant Marine Academy in the Army. I traveled a lot.
Yep.
So it was great.
Yeah. So if you want to find out more about Stefano here, look on Instagram at, you know what, just Google his name. It's Stefano. Last name is RITONDALE. Facebook is the same, Stefano written down.
So, if I may, so my Instagram, I don't have personal ones. It's all my cartel one, which is just all source news.
Okay.
All underscore source underscore news. All my social media is the only one that is not like that is my YouTube, which is all source news altogether, no underscore.
Excellent.
You can Google me, Stefano Rendell. My stuff populates there, but I don't want you guys to look at my previous interviews, just this one, and then go from there.
This is the best.
Exactly.
So, brother, thank you so much for coming in. I hope you did enjoy this. I hope it's a little different than anything else you've done. That's one of the challenges here is trying to come up with questions because I don't want to repeat what other people ask you. I don't listen to other podcasts because I want everything here to be original. So it was enjoyable. It's refreshing to hear your perspective. It's also scary. But this is somebody that stays up on this. It's in the know on this kind of stuff. So thanks you folks for coming back. If you haven't checked us out, Game of Crimes has a Patreon channel. Just go to patreon.com/gameofcrimes. You get early access to each week's guests that are coming up. You get 4 days early access. No advertising, no music, minimal editing because you're getting it early. Right now, we got a special going on where when I had a co-host, Morgan Wright, he interviewed Javier and I about the Medellin cartel. It's the most extensive interview we've ever done, 12 episodes. Right now, what's going on is the two case agents, Chris Feistel and Dave Mitchell, who took down the Cali cartel. And that's 14 or 15 episodes. So you get access to that. There's monthly Q&A. You can ask me anything. There's a section where it's called You Can't Make This Crap Up about stupid criminals who do case reviews. Just come over and have some fun. Try it out. You can actually listen to the first 5 minutes of it for free. And then see if you want to join. And then if there's something you're interested in, come on one of the paid levels. Give me a chance. Maybe see if I can win you over. In the meantime, thank you again for coming across to hang out with us here on the Game of Crimes. Thank you for coming on board to play the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game you're ever going to play. And that's here on the Game of Crimes. God bless everybody. We'll see y'all next week.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.